Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 12th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Community Painting the Season Bright. There's a large photo here that says Emily Kinnison of Dilly Dally Design paints a festive holiday scene on the windows of three Main Gal on West Wood Street in Decatur on Tuesday, December 9th. And there's a close-up of Emily Kinnison painting. You see a big swaths of paint on the large plate glass windows in front of the business. And then a smaller photo is a close-up of what she's painting on the picture, and it's one panel is Santa Claus with snow in the background, and then a larger picture of the finished paintings on the windows. The above close-up of Santa Claus shows Emily Kinnison, again of Dilly Dally Design, putting finishing touches onto a painting of Santa Claus at the Main Gal in Decatur, and then, like I said, the full windows with panels show the windows of the Main Gal. Main is spelled like horse's mane, M-A-N-E, on West Wood Street are decorated with painted holiday scenes in Decatur on Wednesday, December 10th, and they're very festive. There's Santa Claus is riding on a unicorn. I've never seen that before. And then there's down, I can't see all of the panels, or in the distance, there's a Christmas wreath with a red bow and starlight and other Christmas things in the different windows. Here comes Santa Claus and color to Decatur storefront. And I don't think there's a story that goes along with this. I think this is just the front page pictures and showing the Emily Kinnison painting them in bright, festive colors. Also on the front page, Giving Holiday Helpers Sought. Giving Holiday Helpers Sought. Care and Share event in Decatur seeks donors, volunteers. The annual Care and Share event could use more volunteers and more donations, organizers say. Care and Share is a collaboration among the Salvation Army, Dove Inc., and the Northeast Community Fund, hosted by St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Between the beginning of October and the week before Thanksgiving, 1,200 families registered for assistance, which includes 3,000 children up to age 17, said Ryan Huff, Marketing and Communications Coordinator for Dove. Those families have been given a day and time to visit St. Paul's, where toys, clothing, food baskets, warm hats and gloves, blankets, and Christmas stockings will be distributed between Monday, December 15th and Friday, December 19th. More donations for teenagers aged 13 through 17 are needed, Huff said. And suggestions include chargers, makeup, headphones, and sports equipment. Stocking stuffers for babies and boys ages 11 to 13 are also in need. Donations can still be dropped off behind the church at 1 Backrack Court in Decatur. Follow the signs to the warehouse area at the back of the building. Volunteers can accept donations from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's really one of the best collaborations I've seen, said Major Susan Summit of the Salvation Army. We've been other places where everybody was in a silo, and that's not the case here. For the last 5 years, she said, the Salvation Army, Dove, Toys for Tots, and Northeast Community Fund have combined their applications and efforts, which streamlines the process and avoids duplication of efforts, with St. Paul's helping by offering its large warehouse space for the distribution. Decatur City buses have even altered their routes to drop people off at the door, which helps when residents don't have their own transportation. Every child receives one big gift and two smaller ones, a hat and gloves, a blanket and a stocking, and families get a food box with the fixings for a traditional Christmas dinner. The Salvation Army has done its Christmas drive for more than 100 years, Summit said. The collaboration among the social service groups began 5 years ago, partly because of the COVID-19 pandemic, she said. The men's shelter developed a mold problem, and the men's beds had to be moved to the Salvation Army's gym, which meant there was no space for the Christmas event when families come to pick up toys for their children. St. Paul's offered to host, and the other agencies partnered with the Salvation Army to make the event a one-stop shop. The community has just shown up for these families, Summit said. I've never been in a more generous community, she said. There are still needs to fill, too, she added. More bell-ringing volunteers are needed as the Red Kettle fundraising efforts are falling short so far this season. The donations received during the Christmas season support all the Salvation Army's efforts throughout the year. The shelter, assistance with rent and utilities, the food pantry and the social programs that help people who are homeless get back on their feet and into their own homes. This year's goal is $400,000, and as of this week, donations are $45,000 less than this time last year. I know we're associated with Christmas, but what we raise helps to help others throughout the entire year, Summit said. And the photos here on page A8 show volunteers Shamaria Gullins and Martha King sorting toys for tots donations for the Christmas Care and Share at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Decatur on Tuesday, December 5th, 2023. And there are large Toys for Tots boxes, and they're going through them and sorting them into different categories. And then there's another photo that shows Janisa Latson picking out toys during the Christmas Care and Share event at St. Paul's Lutheran in Decatur on Thursday, December 19th, 2024. And these are all toys sitting out on tables, and the woman is looking through the different toys offered. On page A2 in state news, Illinois, Pritzker okays immigration protections in courthouses. This is from Springfield, Capital News, Illinois. Christening it as part of a nation-leading response to aggressive federal immigration raids, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation Tuesday allowing Illinois residents to sue immigration agents who arrest them in or near courthouses or if they believe their constitutional rights were violated. The new law, which lawmakers have acknowledged is likely to face a legal challenge, also requires public colleges and universities, hospitals, and child care facilities to set up policies for dealing with immigration enforcement and mostly prohibits them from disclosing the immigration status of students, patients, parents, and children. Together, we're sending a message to Donald Trump, to Kristi Noem, to Gregory Bovino, to anyone seeking to terrorize our people. Your divisiveness and your brutality are not welcome here, Pritzker said, surrounded by state lawmakers and immigration rights advocates in Chicago's Little Village neighborhood. We know that this new set of laws can't mitigate all of the harm, but it gives us new protective tools and is a symbol of our shared action against those terrorizing our communities and our state, Pritzker said. Response to Midway Blitz. The Democrat-led state legislature passed the bill in late October during the height of the federal immigration enforcement campaign known as Operation Midway Blitz. The Department of Homeland Security and the operation said the operation, which launched in September and wound up last month, resulted in the arrest of more than 3,000 immigrants who were living in Chicago and its suburbs without legal permission. Though federal officials claimed they were targeting the worst of the worst, DHS data indicates that most arrested had no prior criminal convictions or pending charges. The raids often led to violent confrontations between masked federal agents and protesters during various operations in the city and suburbs, including near an immigration and customs enforcement processing facility in suburban Broadview. Many of these skirmishes resulted in the deployment of tear gas and other chemical agents. Bovino and about 200 Border Patrol agents under his command left Chicago for southern states last month, though they could be back fourfold in this March, the Chicago Sun-Times reported. Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat of Oak Park, said the law sends the message that if you abuse your authority, there are consequences. Our rights follow us into the courthouse, onto campus, to the hospital, and when taking our kids to daycare, Harmon said. No one gets to take them away. We are providing the victims of this chaotic federal assault a clear legal path to go after their abusers and hold them accountable. With Pritzker's signature, all people attending court are considered privileged from civil arrest. Inside state courthouses and within a 1,000-foot buffer zone outside of the buildings. Though there had long been a de facto understanding that such facilities were off limits for immigration enforcement, they have increasingly been the site of apprehensions over the past year. Those who violate the act could be liable for statutory damages of $10,000. It gives people arrested under those circumstances the right to sue the agents who detained them. Criticisms and potential challenge. The law also allows residents to sue immigration agents for violating their constitutional right to due process and protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. They would be able to collect punitive damages that can increase if the agents are wearing masks, concealing their identities, failing to wear body cameras, or using a vehicle with non-Illinois or obscured license plates. Illinois Republicans have criticized the provision, arguing that it would have unintended consequences for state and local law enforcement. It also likely invites a legal challenge from the Trump administration on the grounds that it violates the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. DHS spokeswoman Tricia McLaughlin told Capital News Illinois in an emailed statement that Pritzker must be unfamiliar with the U.S. Constitution. By signing this law, Pritzker violated the Supremacy Clause, his oath he took as governor to support the Constitution of the United States, which itself falls under the Oaths Clause of the Constitution, McLaughlin said. We hope the headlines, social media likes, and fundraising emails he did for this are worth it, she said. Harmon acknowledged in October that the law would likely be challenged, though Pritzker, one of Trump's most pugnacious critics and seen as a political 2028 Democratic candidate for president, said Tuesday that he believed it to be in good shape. Whenever you enact something that is tough, that is about protecting people, there is going to be people out there who attack it, Pritzker said, no doubt. They have the ability to go to court about it, but I believe this is not just a good law, but a great law. Daycares, colleges, and hospitals. The law requires all general acute care hospitals to implement a policy for interactions with law enforcement by January 1. All other hospitals need a plan in place by March 1. Illinois colleges and universities will need to have procedures in place for approving requests from law enforcement agents attempting to enter campus by the new year. The law also prohibits daycare centers from sharing the immigration status of children or parents unless required by law. It also requires the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services and Illinois Department of Early Childhood to provide Know Your Rights materials and preparedness plans to families on their websites. Daycare will also need to adopt plans for interacting with law enforcement agents and notifying parents if agents request a child's information. State Representative Norma Hernandez, Democrat of Melrose Park, said that the fatal shooting of an unarmed father and Mexican immigrant, Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, in September, was an Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer after dropping off his two young sons at school and daycare in the Chicago area, reminds us why this law matters so deeply. His death was not an isolated tragedy, Hernandez said. It is a painful reminder that without strong protections, everyday life becomes a place of danger. And that is where we are right now. That is where we are right now. In addition to the law, Pritzker signed an executive order in October creating the Illinois Accountability Commission, which has been tasked with producing a public record of alleged abuses perpetrated by federal agents during Operation Midway Blitz. It will also examine the impact of such conduct on Illinois residents and communities and offer recommendations for accountability and reform. Also on this page from the Chicago Tribune, temporary restraining order on ICE facility extended. The federal government has agreed to extend until April a temporary restraining order requiring improved conditions of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement holding facility in Broadview, putting off a courtroom face-off that was scheduled for next week. In the wake of a class action lawsuit filed in October, U.S. District Judge Robert Gettleman last month issued a temporary order requiring the federal government to provide immigration detainees enough food, water, and bed space, among other remedies, finding that conditions at the ICE holding facility in Broadview did not pass constitutional muster. The complaint, filed on behalf of two former detainees of the West Suburban facility, accuses DHS officials of warehousing people for days on end in dirty cells that were overcrowded, that people couldn't lay down to sleep at night. A suit further alleges that government officials systematically denied detainees their right to consult with lawyers, in a court filing agreeing to the extension, the government indicated that the population at the facility has remained low since the majority of Border Patrol agents have moved on to enforcement operations in other states. Since a temporary restraining order was first issued, the parties have been working quickly to prepare for a hearing over a preliminary injunction, which, if granted, would provide longer-lasting requirements until a possible trial. That meant deposing key officials and collecting troves of video, surveillance, and other evidence that would have been aired at the hearing. Now, with the agreement to extend the temporary restraining order, if granted by a judge, puts off preliminary injunction hearings or trial until April 19th. The parties, though, disagreed on whether the matter should proceed straight to trial or first go to a preliminary injunction hearing, according to a joint status report filed Tuesday. Attorneys for the plaintiffs, Felipe Augustin Zamacona and Pablo Moreno Gonzalez, are arguing that the government is not producing evidence quickly enough to allow them to be ready for trial in April. There are many disputed facts at issue, requiring discovery, including whether defendants have complied with the terms of the TRO, the extent of defendants' practice of coercing waivers of rights, and how and whether conditions at the facility will change once again in the spring when the defendants ramp up enforcement, the plaintiffs argued in the report. Attorneys for the government, though, countered that a trial and a hearing for a preliminary injunction would be duplicative, arguing that the case is essentially moot now that Operation Midway Blitz has ramped down. Ever since U.S. Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino and his team redeployed to other cities in mid-November 2025, Broadview has been operating at a less than 12-hour processing center, the government said. There have been days where no one was processed at Broadview. On other days, one or two people were processed there. On rare days where 20 or 30 people were processed at Broadview, they were in and out in a matter of hours. During the height of the enforcement operation, the temporary restraining order was issued following hours of testimony from former detainees at the facility who described times in which more than 100 people were crammed into a holding cell, as well as lacking sufficient food, water, and hygiene products. It has really become a prison, Gettleman said. When he issued the temporary restraining order, the conditions would be found unconstitutional, even in the context of prisons holding convicted felons. But these are not convicted felons. These are civil detainees. And the photo here accompanying this article shows plaintiff attorneys arrive for a tour of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement holding facility in Broadview as part of a discovery for the ongoing lawsuit about conditions at the facility on November 13, 2025. And it shows two women at the door of the facility attempting to be let in. And in more local news, on page A3, police, man hit fellow musician. According to Decatur police reports, music could not keep the peace between two Decatur men as one stands accused of breaking in and attacking the other. Anthony D. Cherry, Jr., 23, appeared Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court and pleaded not guilty to battering his 25-year-old friend. He also denied a charge of home invasion. A sworn affidavit said that the battery came as the crescendo to an argument the two musicians were having regarding the music that they make together. Decatur Police Department Patrolman Dalton Heathcock, who signed the affidavit, said officers were called to the friend's apartment November 16 to find him with a face showing red marks and lumps from being beaten. Text messages between the two men reviewed by police indicated the friend had invited Cherry. He is telling Anthony things similar to, come over here, come to my door, and if it's hands, we'll see, as quoted by Heathcock. The friend told police that Cherry took him up on his offer, walked straight into his unlocked apartment, and attacked him, according to the affidavit. Cherry said the other man had told him to come over because he said he was going to beat his expletive. Cherry told police he walked in when he found the door unlocked and then used closed fist and began striking the other man. He told police his friend had fought back during the confrontation, according to the affidavit. Cherry remains free on pretrial release with the condition he is to avoid all contact with the man named as a victim in this case. Other conditions of Cherry's pretrial release is that while in class, the defendant is to stay 10 feet apart from the victim at all times. Cherry is due back in court for a pretrial hearing February 3rd. In more state news on page A4, $11 million donated to Lurie Children's Hospital, transformational gift to boost research of genetics, rare diseases. A couple with deep ties to the Chicago area is donating $11 million to Lurie Children's Hospital in hopes of speeding research, treatment, and diagnosis for children with rare and genetic disorders. Don and Ann Edwards' gift will support the Edwards Family Division of Genetics and Rare Diseases. Don Edwards is a founder and executive chairman of FlexPoint Ford, a private equity investment firm focused on financial services. Don Edwards said his family has experience with genetic disorders and rare diseases. He is also on the board of trustees at Lurie and was previously chairman of the University of Illinois Board of Trustees. Ann Edwards is on Lurie's founder's board, and the couple have three grown children. We know how much genetic diagnosis and potential therapies can change the lives of both the child and the entire family, Don Edwards said. We'd like to see a lot more treatment. Specifically, the money will go toward expanding training for doctors hoping to become pediatric geneticists. Now there's a shortage of geneticists, with only about one geneticist per million residents in Illinois, according to Lurie. On this date in history, Joseph H. Rainey, in 1870, Joseph H. Rainey of South Carolina became the first black lawmaker sworn into the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1963, the East African nation of Kenya declared independence from Britain. It became a republic exactly a year later. In 1985, 248 American soldiers and 8 crew members were killed when an Aero Air charter crashed after takeoff from Gander, Newfoundland. In 2000, George W. Bush became president-elect as a divided U.S. Supreme Court reversed a state court recount decision in Florida's tightly contested presidential election. In 2010, the inflatable roof of the Minneapolis Metrodome collapsed in the early morning hours after a snowstorm dumped 17 inches on the city. There were no injuries, but the NFL had to shift an already rescheduled game between the Minnesota Vikings and the New York Giants to Detroit's Ford Field. In 2015, nearly 200 nations meeting in Paris adopted the first global pact to fight climate change, calling on the world to collectively cut greenhouse gas emissions, but imposing no sanctions on countries that didn't do so. In 2020, thousands of supporters of President Donald Trump gathered in Washington for rallies to back his efforts to subvert the election he lost to Joe Biden. There's some more local news. Circuit seeks applications for the bench. The retirement of Circuit Judge Jeffrey Giesler means the 6th Judicial Circuit is in the market for a new temporary judge. Justice David K. Overstreet of the Illinois Supreme Court has launched the application process for the at-large circuit judge vacancy. Candidates who are interested and meet the legal qualifications can submit applications and a cover letter to Overstreet at P.O. Box 489, Mount Vernon, 62864. Applications can also be sent via email to Overstreet's Judicial Secretary, Renee Gozia, at rgozia@illinoiscourts.gov. Applications must be reviewed by January 12th, and applicants must be residents of the 6th Judicial Circuit at the time of their appointment. The 6th Circuit includes Champaign, DeWitt, Douglas, Macon, Moultrie, and Piatt counties. Further details on information needed for applications can be requested from Overstreet or from Chief Judge Randall Rosenbaum at the Champaign County Courthouse, 101 East Main Street, Champaign, 61801. The successful candidate will serve until the judge vacancy is filled through the general election scheduled for November 7th, 2028. The temporary appointment terminates December 4th, 2028. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 12th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.